her knuckles. She was growing more anxious by the moment.
"Well, I had no choice, did I? Anyway, what does your Tibbin say this time?"
Oliver didn't even have to look. He'd already memorized it. "Trust a friend who looks like one. And I haven't any idea what it means. Gibberish, most likely."
But Alice had just remembered something. "Oliver," she said, "the fox..."
"Yes?"
"The fox said that very thing to me, just before he walked away. First he said, 'Snap in three in case of emergency,' and then he said, 'Trust a friend who looks like one.'"
Alice frowned.
"At first I thought it was nonsense, but now I think he was..."
"Telling you our Tibbins?" Oliver's mouth had popped open. "They're supposed to be private information." Alice shook her head.
"All the fox said was, 'We know. We all know.' He also said he knew I was here to find Father."
Now Oliver looked convinced. "They're definitely watching us. They know our Tibbins, and they know I lied to them at border control. Goodness. He was a very helpful fox, wasn't he? I might have even liked him if he hadn't tried to eat me."
"Me too," said Alice softly. "He was very kind otherwise. It was all very strange. He was a strange fox."
And then more thoughtfully,
"I do wonder, what do you think Father was doing here?"
It was a very good question, though perhaps one Alice should have asked sooner. The thing was, Alice hadn't really wanted to think about why Father was here, because she hadn't wanted to believe that Father had left home on purpose. Alice, you will note, had a bad habit of ignoring matters of unpleasantness in her life. See also Alice's fervent denial of her true magical ability, no matter the consequences. Alice still hoped Father had been trapped or tricked or had been forced to come to Furthermore. She couldn't understand why he would leave her voluntarily, nor what he'd hoped to do here in a land so far from Theronwood.
"Well," said Oliver, clasping and unclasping his hands, it could have been for any number of reasons, couldn't it?"
"But why was he meddling in Furthermore magic? You don't think he was really a spy, do you?"
"No," Oliver said firmly. "I definitely don't think he was a spy. I will say, however, that I think Furthermore is more than a little paranoid."
"But then why would he come here? Why do visitors ever come to Furthermore?"
Alice prodded.
"What's the draw?"
"Vacation?" Oliver said too loudly. "Perhaps a bit of travel?"
"Oliver, please," said Alice. "You mustn't hide things from me any more. I can handle the truth, whatever it is."
She stared at him.
"Really, I can."
"Honestly, Alice," he sighed, "your father's motives I don't truly know. I have only my assumptions."
"And they are?"
Oliver shrugged.
"Visitors only ever travel to Furthermore when they want something they can't otherwise procure. It's a land that deals in the dangerous and the unlawful. If what you want exists nowhere else, it's likely to exist here.
But getting here is incredibly complicated.
It's a perilous journey, and the stakes are too high for non-essential wants and needs."
"No,"
Oliver said, shaking his head.
"People only ever come to Furthermore when they are in desperate need of something important, something worth all the risks."
He looked up, locked eyes with Alice.
"So you tell me," he said, "is there something your father wants more than anything else in the world?"
Alice hesitated, thinking carefully before answering.
"I don't think so,"
she finally said.
"I confess I wouldn't really know."
Oliver shook his head again.
"It's inconceivable that he'd come here for no reason. Think, Alice, you're overlooking something wildly obvious."
"What's that?"
she asked.
"You."
"Me?"
"Yes," said Oliver. "You're underestimating how much your father loves you."
"What?"
Alice's heart was kicking around in her chest.
"You think Father came here for me?"
"What I think," said Oliver, "is that what your father wants more than anything else in the world is for you to be happy."
Alice blinked,
her eyes stinging with emotion, and looked away.
"And what does your father think will make you happy?" Oliver asked. "What is the secret desire of your heart?"
Oliver knew. Of course he knew. He'd known the secret desire of her heart since the first time he met her. This was a part of his talent.
And Alice's deepest secret was more than just the truth of her real ability. It was also her deepest wish, her forever fantasy.
"Color," she said, her voice catching. "I want color."
"And don't you think," Oliver said quietly, "that your father, knowing your pain, would come here for you in search of a solution? Furthermore, uses magic in ways Farronwood never has. It's a place of endless experimentation and infinite possibility. It makes sense that he would search here, especially if he's been here before."
Alice's heart was thrown into chaos. She could hardly speak, and even if she could, she didn't know what to say. To think that Father had put himself in such danger, that he'd risked so much for her?
It was impossible to describe her heart's simultaneous pain and joy. So she was silently grateful she didn't have to, because just as she parted her lips to respond, Oliver did her a great kindness and changed the subject. "So anyway," he said, staring off into the distance, "I do hope we'll still be able to find him."
"What do you mean?"
Alice said sharply, the gentle moment forgotten.
"Why wouldn't we be able to find Father?"
Oliver clapped a hand behind his head and looked off into the distance. "It took me 68 villages just to unearth the basic facts of your father's imprisonment, and when I failed to reach him, I thought we needed to start over in the same pattern, only I figured we'd need to do it better this time. It had taken so much work just to be able to get a glimpse of where your father had gone that I was too afraid to do anything differently. I didn't want to lose track of him. But ever since we left Tim, we've been taking paths I've never traveled, and I don't know what that means for us."
"Well, I don't want to lose Father," Alice said nervously. "Maybe we should go back to the original plan, Oliver. I think that might be..."
"No," he said, "absolutely not. We will find your father, yes, but we will fix you first." He looked at where her right arm used to be.
"This is an emergency," he said softly. "It's not a waste of time. In cases of physical wound or peril, furthermore has been known to overlook the expense. Your father won't suffer for our delay, I can promise you that."
"You're sure?"
said Alice anxiously.
"Because I've already got one arm, and I'm sure I don't need two. I'd really rather find Father."
"Alice," Oliver said with a laugh,
"you are so very, very strange."
He was staring at her, a gentle smile strung from ear to ear, and it was then that Alice realized how different he'd become in this short time. Alice couldn't explain why exactly, but she knew now that things had changed between them. Oliver had become her friend in an absolute, uncomplicated way. She was done fighting him, and he was done lying to her. Their friendship had changed seasons. And now, after all they'd fought through, she couldn't imagine returning to Farronwood life without him. She couldn't think of sleeping with the pigs and fighting with Mother and sharing a room with her tiny brothers and finding ways to pass the time on her own. How could she forget the excitement of an adventure with Oliver? What would her life be like when they finally returned home? Strange. She hadn't thought of it until just then. It scared her a little.
"A new adventure awaits!"
Oliver cried, charging forward.
"I'm very glad you're excited,"
Alice laughed as she ran to catch up to him. "But we still haven't a single idea how to get to a painter to fix my arm. What do we do now?"
"We figure it out," Oliver grinned. "Furthermore is a land of tricks and puzzles, so we must use the only tools we've got."
"And what tools are those?"
Oliver beamed.
"Our brains, of course."
Alice and Oliver had been wandering a long while before the floral hedges finally opened up to an expansive clearing. Endless green hills rolled off into the distance, their gentle slopes dotted with wildflowers. Soft, golden light filtered through spider-webbing tree branches, creating an impression of sweetness that the land of Furthermore did not deserve. Most curious, however, was the great, glimmering lake set just beyond the hills. A long wooden pier had been built out to the middle of the water, where the path was then split in two. Separate footbridges led to either ends of the lake, one going left and the other right, but where those paths went, Alice could not see. "Oh, this is splendid," said Oliver, awed as he looked around. "And much more interesting. I thought for sure that we were in another village."
"And we're not?"
Oliver nodded at the lake. "Your emergency door dropped us inside of an intersection." He looked at Alice. "This is a traveler's turning point."
"So we have to choose which way to go?"
"Yes."
"And I'm guessing it won't be easy," said Alice.
Oliver laughed. They didn't speak as they climbed the gentle hills, but Alice was studying the idyllic scene like it was something to be feared. Birds were pirouetting through the air, and lambs were bleating their woes, and flowers dipped and swayed in the wind like this was just another perfect day, but Alice wouldn't believe it. And when they finally, reluctantly, stood at the end of the pier in the very middle of the lake, she and Oliver didn't know which way to turn.
"So,"
said Alice,
"left or right?"
"Wrong," said Oliver. Alice raised an eyebrow. "We have four choices, not two," he said. "Up, down, left, or right."
"Down?"
said Alice, taken aback.
"You mean down into the lake?"
"And up into the sky, yes."
"Oh, for Farron's sake," Alice said and sat down.
Alice hadn't the faintest idea which way to go, but she didn't say as much because her vanity wouldn't allow it. Oliver was now relying on them to use their brains to navigate furthermore, and as she was currently the smartest person she knew, outside of Father, of course, Alice didn't want to lose that title to Oliver. She wanted to prove herself. She wanted to be useful.
She wanted to be smarter than Oliver.
And then she had a sudden stroke of inspiration.
"Perhaps the answer is in the pamphlets,"
Alice cried, and not a moment later she was digging papers out of her pocket, and soon she was unfolding What to Know Before You Go, all 10 feet of it rattling and unfurling across the pier. Oliver flit about anxiously as Alice perused the papers, shooting her skeptical looks and claiming he'd never had to rely on pamphlets to get him through furthermore, and "It's all nonsense anyway, not meant for anything but confusing." But Alice paid him no mind. She carried on perusing, and soon his anxiety gave way to acquiescence, and moments later he was sitting by her side. The two of them pored over the pages in hopes of finding a single useful word, and though it took them nearly 10 minutes to come upon it, they eventually found their answer in large, shouting capital letters. "Construction notices. All intersections. Up and down exits permanently closed for repair. Do not attempt down exit without permit. Do not attempt up exit on Monday through Friday or Saturday, and definitely not Sunday. If exit is necessary, right and left are under construction, but currently operational. Proceed with caution! Note, down exit disallowed on Mondays from 2 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m.
"Well, that wasn't helpful at all, was it?"
Alice said with a sigh.
"What do you mean?"
Oliver was beaming. "It says here that up and down exits are closed. Narrows things down, doesn't it? Now we only have to choose between left and right."
"Well, yes,"
Alice said.
"But do we go left or do we go right?"
"Oh," Oliver said, the smile gone from his face.
"I don't know." "Let's go left,"
Alice said, deciding. She got to her feet.
"Everyone is always going right, and if so many people are going right, it's bound to be wrong, I think."
"Okay, then," Oliver said, looking at her like he was proud. And surprised. But mostly proud. "Left it is. Left we go."
"Left we go,"
Alice cheered. So that was that. They took the left footbridge and ran as left as it would go, until they ran into a wall. They were knocked backward with two short screams, one after another, and landed painfully on their backsides. Oliver moaned. Alice groaned.
"My head,"
he said.
"My eyes," she cried. "I can't see a thing."
"Alice..."
"Oliver?"
"Yes?"
"Are you all right?"
"Just fine," said Oliver.
"Oh, good, me too."
They were both silent a moment. "Well," Oliver finally said, "I can't see a stitch."
"No," said Alice, "neither can I, and it smells like dirt."
"And wood," Oliver said. "It smells like dirt and wood."
"It does, doesn't it?"
A pause.
"Where are you?"
Alice hadn't any idea where they'd landed. She stumbled to her feet and tread carefully, single arm out, feeling for familiarity. Alice and Oliver both breathed sighs of relief when they collided, and he quickly took hold of her only hand, holding tight as they forged forward, sniffing and sensing and listening for a hint of what would come next. They hit wall after wall of old, musty wood. Strange, the wood felt damp, until they finally stumbled upon a door. Alice's heart did a happy flip in relief, and Oliver laughed a nervous sort of laugh, and then... they hesitated. Alice wanted to turn the knob, but Oliver said they had to knock. "It's the furthermore way," he reminded her. "It's improper to walk uninvited through a door that isn't your own. You always have to knock."
"But what if no one answers?" she asked. "What if we knock forever and no one comes?"
"Nonsense," Oliver said with a wave of his hand. "There's no door in furthermore that isn't aching to be opened." Alice took a deep breath.
"Very well," she said. "If you're certain."
"Quite certain." They were both quiet a moment.
"Are you ready?"
said Alice. "Always," said Oliver. And together, his knuckles and hers, they knocked on the door made of damp, musty wood, and tried not to think too hard about what might be waiting for them on the other side. After only a moment, the door creaked open. Wood straining against wood, the door no longer seemed to fit in its frame. It was so old and warped, it was almost as though it had never been opened until that very moment. Alice was goosebumps everywhere. Inch by inch, light poured into the dim room they stood in, until soon the lengths of it were flooded with light, and Alice and Oliver had to squint to see who stood on the other side. Alice blinked and blinked until a figure finally came into focus, but even then she was confused. It was either an owl or a very old man. She couldn't be sure. All she did know for certain was that he was very happy to see them. She knew this because the first thing he did was burst into tears.
"Honorable guests have left," he said, sobbing. "You are most welcome to our land. Oh, honorable guests," he wept. "Bless you for bestowing your good graces on our home. Bless you," he said, "for choosing left when you could have gone right. Bless you," he said, his voice cracking, "for we've wanted for visitors for so long. We hoped and danced for the chance to speak to another. Waited and waited for a moment with a new friend. Oh, honorable guests."
He was half-bent, hands clutching his knees and weeping. Alice could see now that he was indeed an old man and not an owl, and she was so startled, so moved, so touched, and so tentative she wasn't quite sure what to do. She looked at Oliver. He shrugged.
"Please," the old man said after he'd pulled himself together.
"Please," he said, gesturing toward the light. He moved just outside the door to allow them room to pass.
"Step into the land of left, the land of my home."
"A land," he said with sudden pride, puffing his bird-like chest into the air,
"no longer ignored, no longer neglected. Oh, joy, oh, joy," he said. "What a day, what a day."
Oliver stepped forward cautiously and peeked his head out. She heard him gasp, and then he looked back, eyes wild, and made an effort to smile.
"It's okay,"
he whispered. Alice took Oliver's outstretched hand and followed him out the door. She didn't know what she felt more, nervousness or excitement, or a nervous sort of excitement, but oh, where they were she didn't know and didn't mind because it was beautiful and strange. The little old man was beside himself with joy, and she didn't think anyone had ever been happier to see her than he was just then. Friends, they had just stepped out of a tree trunk. These were trees as tall as giants who were tall for their size, trees as grand as mountains, tree trunks as wide as tree tops, trees chock full of leaves so green she could barely stand to look at them. They were high, high above the ground, but in the land of Left there was a clear bottom. Many thousands of feet below them was an expanse of green that seemed to go on forever. She could see little yellow flowers dotting the tall, wild grass. But most interesting wasn't the web of interconnected trees. It wasn't the many busy people tending to their lives in a brilliantly lit forest. Well, I mean, it was all of that, but it was more. Here, their homes were made from empty eggshells, mostly whole or one-quarter missing, each one painted a different geometric design. They were bright and steady and somehow unbroken, hung from branches with thick, glittering white rope. Inside each one was a little world, a home that held hearts and minds, and it was immediately obvious to Alice, and Oliver, that the people of Left were a happy sort. But experience had taught her to be suspicious. The little old man was waiting for them under a canopy of branches. There was just enough shade to protect them from the sun, but occasionally the light would slip through a crack and remind them all how dim they were without it. Alice and Oliver carefully balanced their way down a branch and followed their new guide. Suddenly he came to an abrupt stop, jumped straight up in surprise, and turned back to face them. "My goodness," he said, "I have taken leave of my manners." He shook his head and bowed slightly. "Please forgive the oversight," he said. "It's only that I am so very pleased to see you that I forgot everything but my own excitement." He lifted his head and looked them in the eye. "I am Paramint," he said, "and it is my great honor and privilege to meet you both." Alice and Oliver introduced themselves, and as they did, Alice noticed that Paramint was wearing an outfit she had never seen any person wear before, a mustard-colored button-down shirt with a bright blue vest and a red-on-rust pinstripe jacket paired with olive-green velvet trousers. He wore chocolate-brown boots, so shiny, Alice swore she heard them glitter, and he carried in his hand a very tall candy cane, presumably for walking. So many clothes for a man. Alice was impressed. Alice had only ever seen Father wear loose tunics and linen slacks, and occasionally his denim jacket when it was cold. But not only was Paramint wearing a shirt, a vest, trousers, and a jacket, he was also wearing some kind of knitted cloth. A scarf, perhaps, knotted around his neck, and he'd stuffed a handkerchief in his jacket pocket. It made her wonder if he sneezed a lot. But never mind all that, because Paramint was the nicest, cleanest old man she'd ever met. He explained that it was his job to guard the visiting door and to always be ready for guests. He said it was all he did all day long. He made sure he was prepared and looked presentable for the day the Land of Left would finally receive a visitor. He said he'd been waiting 56 years. Paramint ushered them down one branch and up another, all the while announcing very loudly to anyone who would listen that Alice and Oliver were the honorable guests who'd finally arrived. There were many gasps, a few short screams, and occasionally someone would faint. Oliver had a bad habit of laughing very nervously when this happened. The whole of Left was dressed in complicated clothes. A few of the ladies wore suits much like Paramint's, and though they were well-tailored and colorfully done, the truth was Alice hated suits just as much as she hated pants, so really it was only the gowns she loved. There were a few ladies, and even a gentleman or three, who wore the most beautiful gowns, flowing skirts and intricate tops, and did very interesting things with their hair. Alice looked down at her own tattered clothes and touched her matted, knotted hair and, for just a moment, was silly enough to be sad she wasn't a bit more presentable. She imagined that she and Oliver must have looked very strange indeed. What a pair of dirty visitors they were. Were it not for the blue shoes Oliver had made for her, Alice would have had nothing to be proud of, because those blue shoes were now the most beautiful things she owned. And no matter her running, jumping, and nearly dying, the slippers still looked brand new. Oliver had done some very skillful magic. Speaking of Oliver, he was currently engaged in the practice of awe. He was looking around, bright-eyed and blooming, truly wowed by the Land of Left. Alice thought Oliver had seen all there was to see, and furthermore, she thought he could never be wooed again, not the way Alice was when she first arrived, but clearly she was wrong. Oliver had grown accustomed to the things he'd already seen, but beyond that he was just as vulnerable as she was. She knew then that they'd have to be even more vigilant now. Without Oliver's constant caution, they'd have to work even harder to keep from falling prey to the fancy twists and feasts of furthermore. Alice took a nervous breath and squeezed Oliver's hand. He squeezed back. Neither one of them was an expert here, and here, in the land of left, they'd be faced with an entirely new challenge. Oliver says, "I'm terrible at chapter headings." Paramount never wanted them to leave. He'd been waiting 56 years for visitors, which meant he'd had 56 years to plan all the things they would do when visitors finally arrived. Alice only realized this when they'd reached Paramount's home. The hanging homes were quite spacious and sturdy, despite their eggshell exteriors, which made Alice wonder where these eggs had come from. What kind of creature could lay an egg so large? She decided she didn't want to think about it. But then she also didn't want to think about the very large scroll Paramount was pulling out of a trunk in the round of his home, but there wasn't much she could do to stop it happening. "We'll start with a celebration, of course," Paramount said as the scroll unfurled at his feet. "And it will be a very grand day indeed, a feast for all, even the little ones. We'll have dozens of cakes and every fresh berry and pitchers of fairy snip and candied corn husks. We'll have a musical jamboree. We'll sing every dawn and dance every night." Alice and Oliver were sitting on Paramount's very small pumpkin orange couch, not saying a word. "Of course, we must first alert the queens," Paramount was saying, "who will then alert the princesses, who will then alert the twinsesses, who will then—"
"Paramount,"
Alice said, clearing her throat quietly.
"Yes, your honorableness," he said, dropping the scroll in an instant. "What good thing may I do for you?"
Alice smiled an uncertain smile, unaccustomed to such attentions, and said, "We are so, so grateful for all your kindness, and so excited to be in the land of left." "It really is the most lovely place," Oliver said, smiling as he looked around.
"Oh, thank you, sir," said Paramount, blushing. "Thank you so much."
"But I'm afraid we can't stay for very long," Alice said carefully. "Is there any chance we could cut short the festivities?"
Paramount was deathly still for only a few moments before he began nodding very quickly.
"Of course," he said. "Of course. Forgive me, your honorableness. I should not have assumed you would want to celebrate so much."
Alice smiled, relieved.
"I will make the proper changes to our schedule," Paramount said, still nodding. "I'm certain that with the right planning, we may yet have a wonderful time and celebrate just as thoroughly over a 10-year period."
Paramount was smiling a pained sort of smile.
"Will that be all right, do you think?" "It will be difficult, yes, and it will mean a lot of very busy days, but I'm sure together we can make it work."
Alice looked from Paramount to Oliver, and from Oliver to the eggshell house, and from the eggshell house to the world that lay beyond it, and she began to panic all over, every inch panicking, and she didn't know what to do. Oliver didn't appear to either. They said nothing, the two of them. Alice sat there like a stone, turned solid from the inside out, and Paramount didn't even seem to notice. She was all dread and worry and fear, and she didn't know how they'd get themselves out of this one. She really didn't. She rolled Paramount's words over and over in her mind. How many queens were there? How many princesses? How many twinsesses? More importantly, how angry would the twinsesses be if Alice and Oliver tried to escape, and where did those eggshells come from? Alice wasn't sure she wanted to know the answers to her own questions, but she knew they needed a plan. Paramount had left them alone for a stretch. He was seeing about their baths, he'd said, and she and Oliver were still sitting on that little couch in the eggshell house, staring at each other like they thought they could summon solutions out of each other's brains. Speaking of brains, using theirs had turned out to be a very bad idea, and Alice said as much to Oliver. He didn't seem bothered at all.
"Oh, don't worry about Paramount," Oliver said, waving a hand as he got to his feet. "That's what I'm here for, remember? I can always persuade him to let us go. I'm not worried about that."
Relief flooded through Alice so quickly she would have needed to sit down if she weren't already sitting.
"Well, why didn't you say something sooner?"
She collapsed backward on the couch, every tense muscle in her body coming undone.
"And why didn't you try to convince Paramount while he was still here?"
"Because I haven't the faintest idea where we'll go if we leave right now," Oliver said. "We need a safe place to stay until we figure out how to find a painter. Perhaps Paramount will be able to help us."
Alice made a small sound of agreement before letting herself melt more completely into the couch. Alice was so tired and so full of fears and worries that she could almost understand what it was like to be a real grown-up. In any case, she desperately needed a break, and she was grateful for the chance to let her guard down for just a moment longer. But Oliver wouldn't allow it.
"Up, up, up," he said abruptly. "Now's not the time to be lazy, Alice. We must remember to pay extra attention while we're here, especially now that we know we're being watched more closely than most."
Alice threw Oliver a grumpy look and stumbled up to her feet. "Now, I don't think Paramount is the one to worry about," said Oliver, "but all the same, we must keep our eyes and ears open for anything that seems interesting or suspicious. Perhaps if we listen closely, we'll be able to unearth something new. In the meantime, I'll see what I can do about finding a painter."
It wasn't much to go on, but it would have to do. Alice sighed. It was a struggle to remain optimistic. Everything had already gone terribly, horribly wrong, and for every minute they spent searching for anyone but Father, Alice grew more anxious. She was being crushed by the guilt of her own perceived selfishness, and if they didn't find a painter soon, she would insist they abandon the plan to fix her arm. Her priority was Father above all else, and she couldn't risk losing him again.
Alice and Oliver desperately needed a bath. Paramount led them down a mossy branch that led to a ladder nailed into the trunk of a nearby tree. They climbed until they reached the very top of the trunk, which had long since been hacked off and flattened out. The top of the tree was now a large, flat, oblong expanse of polished wood, and atop it were dozens of gleaming porcelain tubs. Ladies and gentlemen dressed much like Paramount were awaiting Alice's and Oliver's arrival with towels, robes, bouquets of flowers, and pots of something warm. Alice was so excited to be clean again that she was already untying the ties of her skirts. Oliver, ever the gentleman, saw Alice half undressing and began to fidget, clearing his throat and stuffing his hands in his pockets and studying a tree branch very carefully. Unfortunately for Oliver, his discomfort was no discomfort of hers, as Alice was unaware of his blushing and fidgeting. She hated clothes and was happy to be rid of them. Alice gladly followed a smiling lady to an empty tub and let herself relax. She was about to have a bath, and just this once she would allow herself to enjoy something, and furthermore, she would bathe, and it would be beautiful. She couldn't wait. The lady helping Alice introduced herself as Ancilly, and Alice decided she liked Ancilly's smiling, honey-hued face and frizzy shock of red hair. Ancilly helped Alice step out of the rest of her clothes and into the tub, and there Alice sat, using her one arm to pull her knees to her chest. She shivered as a cool breeze blew past, and then pure, undiluted delight. Friends, this was not a bath of hot water, but of warm milk, rich and silky in a way that made Alice's very bones unclench. Ancilly poured pot after pot of warm milk into the tub until it was sloshing against Alice's shoulders. She sank down and let her limbs melt into the milk, and just as she thought the beauty of this moment had reached its maximum, Ancilly brought out the bouquets she'd been carrying. She broke off the blooms one handful at a time and carefully tossed them into the tub. The flowers bobbed at the surface, rainbow icing on the cake of a delicious experience, and Alice closed her eyes, enjoying every minute. Their fragrance soothed her, and the warm milk soothed her, and the colors soothed her, and soon Alice was cocooned in pleasure, and she was reminded, all at once, why furthermore was so dangerous. Alice knew she could lie there in that tub forever, and she knew then that she had to be even more cautious as the moments passed. Soon, she thought, very soon she would be cautious, but right now,
for right now,
she would relax. Too soon, Anne Silly had returned with a warm towel, and too soon, Alice was dry and clean and smelling of sunshine. Alice was swiftly wrapped in a toasty robe, and Anne Silly set to work running a comb through her wet hair. Anne Silly hummed as she worked out the knots, and once that was done, she sang a sweet, sad song as she braided it all together. Her voice was low and soothing, almost a murmur, and Alice, who was nearly drunk on relaxation, could only just make out the last few words.
In the sky, in the sky. I fell one day into the sky, in the sky, in the sky. I fell one day. I learned to fly.
Alice had very nearly fallen asleep. She startled her eyes open just in time, ever fearful of Oliver's warning to never sleep without a dream. But Anne Silly's song was so rich and somber that Alice's heart had turned to jelly. Our young friend was warm and loopy, and Anne Silly's gentle hands were busy weaving flowers into her hair. Alice stifled a small yawn. The unexpected pop of color from the flowers against the bright white of her hair and skin made Alice very, very happy. Alice thanked Anne Silly profusely, and the lady blushed, waving off Alice's gratitude.
"Please, your honorableness," she said, "it's a treasure to have you here. If you would please wait a moment, I will return with a gift."
So Alice waited. She sat on a little chair and thought about how pleasant it was to be clean, and how strange it was to have only one arm, and how frustrating it was to want to use the lost limb only to have to keep reminding herself that it was gone. These thoughts occupied her until Anne Silly returned, and her patience was soon rewarded with something extraordinary. In Anne Silly's hands was the most beautiful gown Alice had ever seen. This dress was a true explosion of light. It was clear that it had been designed by a proper artist and made from only the richest materials, and it was certainly more beautiful than anything Alice could have sewn herself. The many skirts and bodice were a cascade of color, ruby melting into dusk, golds becoming greens, blue and plum and raspberry drenching the hem. Each layer was pieced together delicately and deliberately, a thousand sheets of onion-thin silk, scalloped and shimmering like the broken wings of a butterfly. The skirts were full and robust, but still weightless, ethereal. Alice was sure she could float away in this dress. She could fly in this dress.
"Anne Silly," she cried, clutching the gown to her chest, "did you make this yourself?" "Oh, no, your honorableness," she said and bowed her head. "This dress was made by the greatest seamstress of the land of Left. It is left tradition to present our visitors with only our finest gifts."
Her voice caught.
"We never thought we'd have another visitor,"
Anne Silly said, looking like she might cry.
"We are so proud, your honorableness. We are so grateful to you for bestowing your graces on our humble home. Left is so often overlooked."
"Oh, Anne Silly," Alice said, "the pleasure is all my own."
And even though Alice meant what she said, she couldn't help but feel guilty, too. She knew she had to leave, and soon, and in order to do so, she'd have to disappoint an entire village. It broke her heart, but she knew there was no other way. Anne Silly helped Alice into the new dress. Alice noticed it had no sleeves, which suited her one arm very nicely, and she took a moment to admire its details as she tucked her pamphlets,
black card and the broken pieces of her ruler into the deep pockets of the skirt. A spray of feathers was built into the collar, up and outward, creating the illusion that Alice wore wings. Every stitch was a work of art, and Alice couldn't help but admire the finery. She'd never worn anything so elegant in all her life. She spun and swam with each step, the silk ebbing and flowing against her legs. It made her miss the quiet moments she'd once resented, dancing alone in the forest, her heartbeats synchronized to the sounds of the world. Alice was in tears. It was all so very, very lovely. Alice was genuinely touched and couldn't believe for a second that Anne Silly would ever want to eat her. After all, Oliver had said there were good and bad in every bunch, and these, Alice thought, these must be the good ones. Which made her wonder.
"Anne Silly," said Alice, still admiring her gown, "if you have a seamstress herein left, do you have a painter, too?"
Anne Silly looked surprised.
"I'm afraid we don't, Your Honorableness. Why do you ask?"
Alice nodded to where her arm used to be.
"I was hoping to repair the damage," she said, "and I've been told to find a painter."
She sighed.
"You wouldn't happen to know where I could find one, would you?"
Anne Silly shook her head. Alice was disappointed. She knew it was Oliver's job to persuade information out of others, but Anne Silly seemed like someone Alice could confide in. Besides, she and Oliver had very few options. They were already out of time. They had to get to a painter soon. So Alice tried again.
"Is there anyone here who might know where I could find a painter? Maybe the seamstress?"
Anne Silly stiffened. "Perhaps," said Alice quickly. "Perhaps the artists of Furthermore know each other." But Alice had said the wrong thing. Anne Silly's warmth went instantly cold, and she turned away so Alice couldn't read her face. When Anne Silly next spoke, her words were clipped.
"The seamstress might have known where to find a painter, but she was pushed off the branch long ago."
Alice startled.
"Pushed off the branch? Do you mean—"
"She is gone."
"But I thought you said she made this dress,"
said Alice.
"How could she be gone?" "She worked for many years, making clothes in all shapes and sizes in preparation for the day our visitors would arrive. We had to be ready,"
Anne Silly said quietly,
"even if we couldn't be sure anyone would come."
Alice touched her arm.
"Oh, Anne Silly," she said, "I'm so sorry. Please excuse me, Your Honorableness."
Anne Silly stood in one swift motion and immediately began tidying the bath things. She said not another word to Alice.
Alice was dismayed, certain she'd done something to offend, and attempted to apologize. "I'm truly sorry," she tried to say. "I didn't—"
But Anne Silly had begun humming very loudly and pretended not to hear her. Alice looked away, dejected. And then she heard Anne Silly sing. It was the same song as before. She recognized the tune, but this time Alice paid closer attention.
"I fell into the sky one day, and it didn't hurt at all. I fell into the sky one day, but I didn't fall at all. I saw a lady reach for me. She told me not to fear. I saw a lady speak to me. She told me help was here. Oh, I didn't know a truth from lie. She looked so strange to me. But when she pointed at the sky, I knew where I should be. In the sky, in the sky. I fell one day into the sky. In the sky, in the sky, I fell one day. I learned to fly."
Oliver was waiting for her back at the eggshell house. Paramount had given up his home for them that evening, and for the duration of their stay, and Alice was immensely grateful for his sacrifice. In fact, she'd lost track of all the kind things Paramount had done for them since they'd arrived. It felt indulgent to take so much time for themselves here in the Land of Left, but when Alice was being honest with herself, she was able to admit that a bit of rest was necessary. Jumping from village to village was beginning to wear on her, and she wanted to be at her best when they finally found their way to Father.
She'd plopped down on the couch next to Oliver and had already begun telling him all about Ancilly and the peculiar case of the seamstress when she noticed he was looking at her in a very odd way.
"What is it?"
she asked him.
"What's happened?"
"Nothing," Oliver said. "It's just that you look different."
"Do I?"
She looked down at herself.
"I think it's because I'm clean, and because of this staggeringly beautiful gown, obviously."
She laughed and looked admiringly at her skirts. She and Oliver had already marveled together at the gifts they'd received. Oliver had been given ropes and ropes of their finest pearls, which he currently wore draped around his neck and chest, creating the illusion of a collared bib. Oliver tilted his head.
"Perhaps." "Well, you look the same,"
she said to him, looking him over.
"How do you always manage to stay so clean?"
He smiled and ignored her question. "All right, then," he said. "Tell me more about the seamstress." Oliver was wide-eyed by the end of her story. He was so full of thoughts and questions he could hardly sit still. In fact, he was already up and pacing the length of the room.
"This is very, very interesting news," he said.
"Very interesting."
"And the song,"
Alice said.
"So strange, isn't it?"
Oliver met her eyes from across the room.
"Very strange. It sounds like Ancilly was trying to tell you something without actually telling you anything."
"Yes, I quite agree,"
Alice said.
"I wonder what it all means."
"Me too," said Oliver, hesitating. "But I have to say I can't see how the secrets of the seamstress would lead us to a painter."
"Well,"
Alice said, grasping for a connection,
"they're both artists. Maybe they did know each other."
Oliver frowned.
"Possible.
Unlikely, but possible." Alice sighed.
"But that song," said Oliver, "so strange."
"And so sad,"
said Alice,
"to think that the seamstress was pushed off the branch. Oh, how I wonder what happened."
Oliver raised an eyebrow.
"Do you think the song is true, then? Do you think the seamstress has flown away?"
"If by flown away you mean fell to her death, then yes,"
said Alice.
"I think it's true."
"A dead end, then? Pardon the pun," he said, fighting back a smile. "But I'm assuming a dead seamstress wouldn't have much to say."
"Well, it's all we've got for now,"
said Alice, defeated. She slumped lower on the couch and kicked up her feet, and then,
very, very quietly,
so quietly she almost hoped Oliver wouldn't hear her, she said,
"I hope we haven't made a serious mistake choosing to fix my arm over finding Father."
Oliver joined her on the couch.
"Alice,"
he said gently. Alice mumbled something.
"Alice,"
he said again,
"please look at me."
She did so, but reluctantly.
Oliver's eyes were such a striking shade of violet, so bright against his skin.
"Finding a way to fix your arm," he said, "will never be a mistake. Please understand that."
Alice looked away.
"But what if we never find Father because of me?"
"That won't happen."
"But
it just won't," Oliver said.
"Oh, all right,"
Alice said and sighed.
"But I do hope we figure out the next step soon. We can't afford to stay here much longer."
"I know," said Oliver, and he laughed a little. "And it's too bad, really. Under any other circumstances, I think we'd actually have a nice time in the Land of Left. I mean, I know better than to believe anything good can come furthermore. I really do, but they're just so terribly nice to us here. I'll feel bad leaving them, especially as they've waited 56 years for a visitor." He shook his head. I can already picture Paramount's grief-stricken face.
"Me too,"
Alice said quietly.
"I was thinking the same thing earlier, and I don't think they could ever want to eat us, do you? Don't you think they're the good ones?"
Oliver nodded. "I read Paramount's heart when we first arrived here, and do you know what his greatest secret was? His greatest wish?" Alice thought she could guess, but she let Oliver tell her anyway.
"He wanted to be able to open that door," said Oliver. "His greatest, most secret, most ardent wish was to have a visitor come to the Village of Left."
Oh, now I feel awful,
said Alice.
But what choice do we have?
I know. We must forge ahead. After all, Oliver said, we belong in Farronwood, not furthermore. And this made Alice smile. And while I do love a good adventure, Oliver went on, I'm very much looking forward to going home. I think I've had enough of furthermore to last me a good long while.
Me too,
Alice said.
Me too.
She dropped her eyes and touched the only bangle she had left.
But I want Father to come home too. I don't want to go back without him.
Oliver nodded just once and said, I know.
What about you?
Alice asked him, perking up.
What do you miss the most about home?
Me? Oliver said, surprised. He tilted his head like he'd never considered it before. Oh, I don't know. Perhaps the comforts of not nearly dying every day? Alice laughed and said,
Really, though, are you close to your parents? Don't they miss you while you're gone?
I don't think so. Oliver shrugged. I'm not sure. I don't really know my parents, and I'm not sure they really know me.
What do you mean?
My talent, Oliver sighed, is both a blessing and a burden. I learned from a very young age how to manipulate my parents into doing exactly what I wanted, into being the kind of parents I wanted them to be. I only discovered many years later that a 5-year-old's idea of the perfect parent is far from ideal. But by then it was too late. When I stopped interfering and let them take over, they couldn't remember how. They barely even knew me. I'd taken away the most critical years of our life together. They could hardly remember how I'd grown up. And the problem wasn't with just my parents. I'd done it with everyone. I never really meant to, Oliver said quietly. I was just so little. I couldn't understand the consequences of my actions. It was when my father got sick with the fluke that I realized how frail he was, and that one day I would lose him. I was sorry I'd never given him a chance to teach me what he knew, to be my father the way he'd wanted to be. Oliver laughed a sad, humorless laugh. I'd single-handedly destroyed every important relationship in my life by the time I was 10 years old. He hesitated, then said, I have no idea what kind of parents I would have had if I hadn't changed them so early on. Alice drew in a deep, shaky breath.
Oh, Oliver,
she said and took his hand.
That's just the saddest story I've ever heard.
Sometimes, Oliver said,
I feel like my entire life is just a story I tell myself, a lie atop a lie.
Nipping and tucking at people until they're exactly what I want. He sighed.
I hate it. Well,
said Alice,
why don't you stop?
Stop what? Said Oliver.
Stop changing everyone,
she said.
Stop manipulating people. I know it won't change the past, but it'll certainly change the future. It's not too late to get to know your parents.
I suppose it's not, said Oliver, but he was very quiet now.
But you don't want to?
Oliver shook his head. It's not that I don't want to, it's just,
I don't know,
he said quietly.
I'm afraid. Of what?
Said Alice.
Don't you see?
Oliver closed his eyes.
No one would like me if I didn't trick them into it.
And then he looked at her. Really looked at her.
That's why I was so terrible to you in middle care, he said. It wasn't because I thought you were ugly. I didn't think that at all. It was because I knew you didn't like me, and I couldn't convince you not to. I didn't understand then why my persuasion wouldn't work on you. I didn't know about your ever-binding promise, and it scared me. Here was the one person in all of Farronwood who wasn't swayed by my lies, and she didn't like me. It confirmed all my fears. If I let people be themselves, they'd all abandon me. My parents wouldn't love me.
But Oliver, she said, squeezing his hand,
I didn't like you because you were one of the most sincerely rude people I'd ever met. You were arrogant and unkind and a horrible raging skyhole.
Oliver groaned and got up to leave.
Wait,
she said, quickly grabbing his tunic.
There's more, I promise.
Oliver shot her a hard look.
There's more and it's nice,
Alice amended. Oliver relented, sinking back into the couch.
All right, then,
he said. Go on.
Well, look at you now. You're the nicest person and so friendly and loyal. Who wouldn't like you now? Your parents would adore you. And anyway, I think you're wonderful, and you can trust that to be true, no tricking required.
Oliver had turned a blotchy sort of red.
You really think I'm wonderful?
Alice beamed at him and nodded. Oliver looked away and mumbled something she couldn't decipher, but he was smiling now, the silliest look on his face, and Alice was smiling too, looking even sillier than he did, and they just sat there a moment, neither one of them being skyholes, and Alice realized right then that Oliver was her first best friend. It was a moment she would never forget. Finally, Oliver cleared his throat.
Now I've told you all my secrets, he said. Will you tell me yours?
Alice bit her lip and looked into her lap. Her heart had begun to skip in nervous beats.
You already know my secrets, Oliver. I wish I didn't have to repeat them.
Alice, he said gently,
I don't understand. Why won't you accept that you have an incredible talent? Why does it bother you so?
Here it was, her greatest heartbreak of all. The talent she didn't want, the one she wished she never had, the one she convinced herself wasn't really hers, and all because it didn't work where it mattered most. Alice wanted to tell Oliver the truth, but she was afraid it would make her cry, and she desperately didn't want to cry. Still, it was high time to talk about it, and Oliver had earned the right to know.
So,
she said, nodding,
I can change the colors of things.
A chill coursed through her. Her stomach was already doing flips. She hadn't talked about this since long before Father left. Oliver took her hand and squeezed.
I can change the color of anything. The sky,
she said.
The sun. The grass and trees and bugs and leaves, anything I want,
she said softly.
I could make day into night and night into day. I could change the color of the air we breathe, of the water we drink. But you don't,
said Oliver.
You don't, and I don't know why. So much talent,
he said.
So much talent, and...
Alice shook her head hard, cutting him off.
So much talent,
she said,
and I can't even change the color of me.
She looked up, looked at him, her eyes wild and desperate.
I could change you,
she said, and touched a finger to his cheek, his face flipping colors from brown to red to green.
I could turn you 10 shades of blue in the time it takes to blink,
she said softly and dropped her hand.
I can change the colors of everyone else. But I can't change this skin,
she said, raking her fingers down her face.
Can't change my eyes. Can't even make myself look like my own family,
she said, her voice breaking.
Do you know how hard it is,
she said,
to have the power to change everything but myself?
Alice,
I have no color, Oliver.
Her voice was a whisper now.
No pigment. I don't look anything like the people I love. But Alice,
Oliver said softly,
the people who love you wouldn't care if you had giraffe skin.
Alice focused on the rug under her foot and nearly smiled.
Father probably wouldn't mind,
she said.
Father would probably love me no matter anything.
And your mother, Oliver said, she loves you too. But Alice shook her head.
I don't know,
she said, and bit her lip.
Mother was so excited when she first learned of my ability. Father was the one who told her, even though I asked him not to.
She hesitated.
But after Father left, something happened to Mother. Something changed in her, made her mean.
She paused, remembering.
Mother made me practice.